Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA Meeting on Air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with a serenity prayer.
God grant us the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Carly. Carly, would you like to share?
Sure, thanks Rachel. Hi, I'm Carly, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi Carly.
Hi Carly.
My journey with alcoholism definitely started before I had my first drink. I felt definitely a dis-ease and a disconnection within myself from a very young age. I look back now and I see the, the obsessive, compulsive behaviours way before I touched a drop of alcohol. And for me, you know, when I first touched alcohol at 14, I drank alcoholically that first time. I literally felt like I had been given the biggest gift to life. And I definitely, I thought I found what I'd been looking for, and it made me feel really comfortable, and I felt like I could, you know, be the person that I'd wanted to be, even for those few years of, you know, getting to know myself. Anyway, so I definitely got into a lot of trouble. I started to live life not as my parents would have liked me to. I left home at a very young age and I got into lots of trouble with guys and girls and drinking and other stuff. And I then found my love for other stuff over alcohol. And long story short, I ended up in rehab at 19 with a different problem to alcohol. I left rehab and I thought I'd kind of, you know, got over my addiction. I was in rooms and I said, you know, alcohol is not my problem. I've just got problems with self-esteem. And so I went back out drinking after my stint in rehab. And for a while, I kept my drinking under wraps. I wasn't an everyday drinker. I was more of a binge drinker, so I definitely didn't think I had a problem. There were people doing what I was doing, but unfortunately they weren't left with the same consequences as I was. But of course, being the addict that I was or that I am, I didn't seem to identify or acknowledge, you know, that I drank differently. Anyway, I had my son. I drank once when I was pregnant, and I kind of, you know, oops, whoopsie daisy. I didn't see it as a big deal, but I got really drunk. And, you know, that's something that I'm really ashamed of today. But, you know, that's just part of my disease, is that I don't want to recognize things that are actually a problem. So I had my son. I still didn't see that, you know, drinking with a young baby until all hours of the morning, you know, I just thought that's what's getting me through motherhood. I see memes on Facebook, you know, on social media, and, you know, it's all about, you know, those 5 o'clock wines, and I kind of identified as being, you know, a young mum that needed a wine to get me through my days. But yeah, that's kind of not what it was. You know, my alcoholism was really out of control, and the denial, you know, in the preambles I see cunning, powerful and baffling, and it really was. It was so cunning and so powerful over my life, and I wasn't this gutter drunk that, you know, drank every day and, you know, was in a ditch with a paper bag, so I didn't identify as the alcoholic. Yeah, I just struggled. You know, I struggled to live life on life's terms, but I just thought my drinking was normal. And this time, you know, I've been in and out of AA for about 10 years. And this time, you know, people said to me, what was your rock bottom? And I didn't have a rock bottom. You know, I just had a really, you know, I was really anxious and I was really disconnected. And I thought I knew myself because when I was in rehab, I remember being, thinking, oh, I don't know my favorite color, or I don't know my lucky number. So, you know, I got a favorite color and I got a lucky number, and I was like, oh, well, I must know myself. You know, but, you know, I realized that I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was without alcohol. I kind of knew who I was with alcohol. I was very confident and I was life of the party. But with alcohol, I didn't know. And, you know, I thought I suffered immensely with anxiety because I was just an anxious person. But I didn't realize that the anxiety was actually to do with my drinking. I thought that I had an anxiety with driving. I thought it was crazy. I thought that I needed to drink to drive, which that's just absolute insanity, you know, in itself. And it was when I gave up alcohol, I realized that I actually don't need alcohol to drive. I just needed the alcohol to take away what my anxiety, but it was actually fueling my anxiety. Yeah, so there was no rock bottom for me this time. That I'd had a previous rock bottom, but I was just sick and tired of being sick and tired. You know, I was sick and tired of being what I call the merry-go-round of, you know, drinking and then not drinking for a few days and then drinking and there being some serious consequences and then sometimes drinking and there was no consequences. I got to an age where I was like, I'm over this. And, you know, I got down on my knees one day just over a year ago, and I asked God, you know, of my understanding to remove the power from from alcoholism. And I don't know what changed that day, but something shifted. And I think it was complete surrender for me, you know, like I was done. I'd done rehabs. I knew about AA, but I hadn't really fully immersed myself in the fellowship. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. I didn't have a home group. So I kind of just turned up to meetings and expected, you know, life to change. But this time I got down on my knees. I surrendered my will and my life, and I got a home group. I got a sponsor and I started working the steps. And funnily enough, the desire to drink has completely gone, you know, for today. And what I know today is that this is a daily program. And when I first got in here, I was like, I wanted to know what was, you know, how clean I was going to be or how I was going to feel at 8 years clean. And I future tripped a lot, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to know what those promises had in store for me. But the longer I stay in the program, the more peace I get around it is just for today, because all I have is for today. And, you know, what I do today sets me up for tomorrow, absolutely. But I really can't, you know, stress enough how living in the day for me is just, as an alcoholic, I feel is super important. And for me, that's what's kept me clean as well this time, is just keeping it real simple. Keeping it in the day and handing my will to a God of my understanding. And, you know, I was brought up in a religious household, and so I was really anti-God when I came in here. But I don't need, that's what I've realized today, is that, you know, AA doesn't make me, there's no rules, you know. You don't even have to work the steps if you don't want to. It's a suggestion. So you definitely don't have to believe in a God that we talk about, you know. It's your God. And, yeah, I'm super grateful for that, because that's exactly what I need, and that's what this program is. It's exactly what I need. So, yeah, I'm really grateful for the opportunity to share my story. So thanks for listening.
Thanks, Carly. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person we have to share is Vic.
Thanks, Rachel. My name is Vic, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Vic.
Like Carly, I started drinking when I was 14, And it was the most amazing experience that I ever had. I suddenly wasn't myself anymore. I was kind of a super magnified version of everything I thought I wanted to be. I was witty, clever, probably thought I looked good. Everybody else looked good. And it was amazing, absolutely amazing. I wanted more of that. I drank initially to blackout. And I remember coming back from that and thinking to myself, I've got to have more of this stuff, whatever it is. And so that's how it went. I got a job in a supermarket where I could liberate as much alcohol from the shelf on the third aisle as I needed, which not only kept me looking forward to the weekends, but gave me some degree of popularity with my male friends. And the thing was, you know, Friday night would come along and I'd think, where will I go? You know, who will I meet? What will I do? And then Saturday morning, the phone would wake up and I'd think, oh, what did I do? Where did I go? What did I do? My God, you know, and then I get feedback from everyone and I try and pretend that, I remember this. I don't remember anything at all. Nothing. In the end, I continued developing this appetite for more and more, trying to get out of myself. I went to university, and everybody drank at university, and that was okay. So, you know, if you want to hide a library book, you just put it somewhere on a library shelf, and you'll never see it again. I could hide among everybody else that was drinking on the weekends. Of course, they would be studying during the week. So did I. When I graduated, I got a job working downtown in the commercial district, you know, suit and tie. We called ourselves Penguins. And it was straight out of Dan Draper and as this sort of stuff. And drinking was just the normal thing that we did every Friday afternoon, then on Saturdays, then sometimes on Sundays, and we'd pull yourself together or call in sick on Monday. And I was now drinking for medical reasons, because when I woke up in the morning, I had such a hangover, I had to do something to get myself squared away so that I could function. In the end, I met a woman, and we fell in love, and she had her issues with, not with drinking. She didn't mind my drinking, but she had issues with all of her relatives, so we decided we would try go and immigrate to perhaps Australia, and then we would only have to visit them once or twice a year at the very most. This was quite a few years ago. Well, the thing was, when I came to New Zealand, we got off the boat, thought, this is a great place. Yeah, we'll, okay, unload all the furniture. We'll work in Auckland. And the problem was that I had brought the alcoholism with me, and it got worse and worse and worse. And as it got worse, I began to live more and more of a double life. And that was the interesting thing, you know. The liquid that had promised me inspiration and freedom and wittiness and friendships and all like that wasn't delivering any of that to me anymore. I was gradually being imprisoned by this liquid that had been so magical in the first place. It just wasn't working anymore. I had to drink more and more of it. I couldn't predict whether or not I would drink to blackout or be able to get away with it that day. I was moving up through the promotional ranks and so on and so forth. I had my own private office, a couple of doors. I could just lie on with my head on my desk for the first 2 hours of the day until 11 o'clock with both doors locked. And, he's in conference, you know, you can see him after 11:30 sort of thing. Well, in the end, I made a lot of money. And I thought to myself, you know, I don't really actually even need to work anymore. I could drink $30 worth of alcohol a day and die of old age at the age of 90. And what's more is I could do it by myself, because all the people who had loved me, my children, my wife, they'd all shot through. I had completely alienated myself with just about everyone. I was locked in the prison of my own mind. And the bars, if they weren't bars down on the corner where I could drink with alcoholics that drank like me, were just bars that told me that acceptance what you are, and I accepted that I was an alcoholic and that there was nothing I could do about it. Well, my body actually had different ideas. It was going to check out. And so what happened was I was just one Saturday morning down at Countdown, didn't have a bad hangover. I was just going to buy my supplies for the weekend. And the next thing I knew, I woke up in the St. John ambulance. And they were worried that I'd had a heart attack. I was 60 years old at the time by then. But it turned out that when the doctors took the blood test, they said, you know, you don't have very long to live. Your liver is shot. Your kidneys are gone. Here are all the indicators from the tests that we've done. And I told them I was an alcoholic, and they said, yeah, and it's killing you. You'll probably be dead in 2 years. I didn't know what to do. The doctors tried to suggest, well, maybe if I'd tried psychiatry, psychology, self-help books, religion, and all those things, which I had tried, that perhaps I might try AA. I got into a meeting, and I suddenly looked and realized I wasn't alone. All these people had stories that were nearly emotionally identical to mine. They had felt lonely when they were kids. They had felt different than the rest of the gang, whatever it happened to be. And they wound up eventually drinking alone in a room with drawn windows, watching TV or reading books and magazines, which was exactly where I was at. Except now, these people seem to be living completely normal lives, you know? They were successful in whatever they were doing, or at least they were coping with what they were doing, and I wasn't managing it at all. And that's where it says in the first step, we admitted that we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives were unmanageable. Well, I was powerless. It had all the control. I had none of it. And my life had become completely unmanageable. Well, In the final analysis, I realized that alcohol had always been my higher power. But I also realized about that time that the AA program had power over alcohol in people. It had power over alcoholics to keep them from drinking. So I bit the bullet and took the big step, and for once in my life, I tried to be completely honest, as if my life depended on it. My life did depend on it. So I got a sponsor. I began to work the steps as they suggested I should do. And darned if the steps weren't a sequence that would take me step by step through a process of taking an inventory of what was right with me, what was wrong with me, asking that this program remove my craving for alcohol, and fortunately it was, and what would replace it? You know, my best friend. I've lost my best friend, alcohol. There was a grief process going on, but at the same time, there was a rebuilding process going on. I couldn't believe that once my body started getting back online, my brain would catch up with it too. So I became involved in service. And I started chairing meetings and helping out at AA functions and things like this, that, and the other. And with service and regular attendance to meetings, I go to about 3 or 4 a week, came recovery. And, you know, those are the three sides of the AA triangle: service, recovery, and unity. And I now have to say that I feel I've got a lot of friends in AA. We're like one big family and sort of like blood brothers. And, of course, we're united by the blood that can't carry alcohol in it, because it's just not on the radar for those of us who have taken a really active interest in AA and made it a part of our lives 24 hours a day. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Vic. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength, and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the next person we have to share is John.
Yeah, thanks. Hi, Rachel. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, hi, John.
I guess my journey with alcohol was that I started drinking at the age of... the first time I had drunk was 13 or 14 years old. It was on Christmas Eve. And I was at a friend's house, and I'd been allocated a certain amount of drinks over the period of the night. My parents had told me that I was allowed 3 RTDs, and that I was to have them over a certain course of time. And I ended up drinking those far sooner than what they'd intended. And there was lots of people around, and I started really enjoying the effects that alcohol was giving me. I felt like when I was sober, I was shy, awkward, uncomfortable in myself. I was full of fear, afraid of people, just this really uncomfortable person that didn't know how to deal with life. And when I started getting drunk, all of a sudden, like I was as strong as the Hulk. I was as good a dancer as Michael Jackson, and I could sing like him too. Every woman within 100 metres wanted to be with me. It just gave me this false sense of reality, and I loved it. I loved everything about it. And that night I drank far more than was intended. My parents went home. I had to get dropped off by friends, and I threw up all through the kitchen. And was told I wasn't allowed to open my Christmas presents until I had cleaned the kitchen. And I thought that was pretty stink. And I swore at that point that I was never going to drink again, because I felt physically sick. But once that physical sickness wore off, all I could remember was how good I felt and the effect that alcohol produced in me, and I wanted more. And the next opportunity alcohol was presented, this similar thing happened. I'd drink far too much and I'd end up embarrassing myself or my people that I was with, embarrassing them or hurting people or making things, telling people the stuff that I promised I'd do and never end up doing it. And kind of carried on. And as I got a bit older, I started finding other substances, and I love those as well. And I just drank and used more and more as the days got on, to the point where I was drinking and using every day. When I would be drinking, I'd intend to go out with the best intentions, and I'd have this idea that I'd have one drink and I may be the sober driver for the night. And I'd just have one drink so that I didn't look out of place while I was at the bar with my friends. And I'd have that one drink, and by the next morning I'd wake up and wonder what had happened. And that was not my intentions when I went out. And I didn't realise that I had no control over alcohol. I had this craving inside of me that once I had alcohol went into my system, I just wanted more and more and more, and I wanted to get that effect that alcohol produced that first time. And then I'd far exceed that, and I'd go into blackout, where I wouldn't, my body would still be functioning, but I wouldn't know what had happened. And I'd end up with people telling me, do you remember what you did last night? And I'd have no recollection of what had happened, and I'd be filled with this shame and guilt and remorse of what I'd done, and getting told what had happened. And at the age of 22, I knew something was wrong, and I couldn't stand myself any longer, and I couldn't look myself in the mirror. And I ended up going to a place where I knew, to a guy's house that I knew was an AA. And for the first time, I told the truth, because all through my drinking career I'd learned to lie about everything, and I'd lie more and more and more. And I didn't know what the truth and the difference between the truth and reality. And, so I told the truth to this guy, and he said, look, come back tonight and I'll take you to your first meeting. And I went along. I couldn't stand looking at people, and I stared at the floor the whole time, and these people got up and they talked about their experience with alcohol and what had happened, what it was like, and what it was like now for them. And they all seemed really happy, and I couldn't understand why you'd be happy when you went drinking. Because my whole life revolved around drinking. And what happened for me is that my life didn't get better as I went to AA, because I was left with myself. You know, all that stuff, that feeling of those feelings came back or more overwhelming than what it was. But I watched the people that were in AA and that seemed to have relatively sane lives. And they all talked about working the steps, having a sponsor, doing these actions that they didn't really want to do, but they did it because it kept them sober. And I started doing what they did. You know, I asked a man to sponsor me. And he just told me he told me how it was. He didn't beat around the bush, and he was like, if you're going to waste my time, don't bother. And I took those actions that I didn't really want to do. It went completely against my natural desire, my natural ways, and I managed to stay sober a day at a time. And the longer I stayed sober, the better my life became. And I haven't needed to pick up a drink from that point, that first meeting. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous a broken little boy that was terrified of the world, and as time's gone on, I've grown into become a man and completely different person from who I was when I came in here. I am not filled with that shame and that remorse. You know, I can go to bed with my head held high, not held high because that would be weird, but I can go to put my head on the pillow at night and know that I haven't hurt anyone or done anything to embarrass anyone or any of that stuff. You know, I don't have guilt and remorse. My life has become so much better for taking these actions and sticking around. And, you know, my sobriety date is the 25th of May 2008. And for a drunk like me that couldn't stay sober for longer than a week, you know, I've been able to stay sober for that long and able to help other people to get sober. And, I'm grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for what it's done in my life, and I'll leave it at that. Thanks.
Thank you, John. That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meeting lists, there's a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.